It's the Burt Cohen Show. Is the dream exactly? Are we one country, or is it really just kind of an illusion that we're one nation? We're certainly one country, and it's been just about a little over 150 years since the first shots of what is commonly known as the Civil War were fired April 12, 1861 at Fort Sumter in South Carolina. We're going to talk about that quite a bit today with our guest Kirkpatrick Sale. Kirk, thanks very much for being with us on the Burt Cohen Show.
Yes, sure thing.
Well, Kirk Sale is a historian and the author of 12 books, including Power Shift, Human Scale, and The Fire of His Genius, Robert Fulton and the American Dream. That sounds very interesting. Well, since the Civil War ended, most have believed there's been a consensus about what that bloody Holocaust was all about and what was resolved. But in many ways, it seems that the reason for that war remained as alive as ever. Today, we see an unraveling of any Civil War consensus. States are fighting off big federal programs such as the health care reform law. There's talk of nullification of federal laws, anger at the power of central government. There's class issues and other cultural issues. First, Kirk, people commonly refer to the Civil War. Let's get that right off the table. What's your reaction at it being called the Civil War?
Well, it's just wrong and misleading. Civil War, and the word, the phrase was used at the time by some people because what it suggests is that one side of the nation wants to take over the whole nation, as in classic civil wars in England, the War of the Roses, as in Libya today.
All right.
Where we see one side wanting to take over and resist by the other side, but that what happened in the South was not a civil war at all, because the southern states, the original seven southern states, had no interest in taking over Washington or being any part of the North.
Right.
It was a war of secession,
right,
not a civil war. A war of secession like the original war that gave America its independence.
Indeed. That
and once it becomes clear that it's not a civil war, then the North has nothing to fear from the South. The South has no intention of invading the North, and so there's no reason to create a war at all.
Well,
certainly not over secession.
Well, it could have perhaps, and I think as we'll discuss, there are a lot of different options that could have happened without the loss of 620,000 Americans, which I believe was about 2% of the entire population. That's including women, and it was virtually all men that died in the so-called Civil War. And certainly there was the Spanish Civil War, which was a legitimate civil war. It was for control over the capital, control over the country, but this was not that. Now, the conventional wisdom is that 150 years ago, the South started it at Fort Sumter. The story of Fort Sumter is that Confederates attacked federal soldiers who were stationed at the fort, who held that fort after the declaration of secession by South Carolina, where Fort Sumter is. You know, we got to face it. There's always some action necessary for any war to start. There's got to be an excuse. The First World War was the assassination of the Archduke. Merely an excuse. And it was barely related to it at all. In what ways was Fort Sumter used as a reason for the North to start the war against the South?
Well, it was clear that Lincoln wanted to have a war. And how we know this is that South Carolina and the Confederacy both sent delegations to Washington and trying to get first to President Buchanan and then, more importantly, to Lincoln to negotiate deals of the how the states could take back these forts that the Union had stationed with soldiers. And they tried to negotiate it. They offered to pay, and they, of course, let the soldiers go without harm. But Washington didn't want to deal at all. And first, Buchanan sent down a fleet that was going to reprovision Fort Sumter, and the lead ship of that was fired on by cadets from the Citadel College here in Charleston, and that was chased away. But then Lincoln decided in April that he would send down a fleet of some 14 ships with maybe as many as 1,400 men that would reprovision Fort Sumter. Fort Sumter was just sitting out there in the middle of the harbor, and this is months after South Carolina had declared its independence. But they refused to give up that fort. One particular strong reason was that it was able to control traffic in the harbor, and by doing so was able to make sure that the duties and imposts that were enacted by the federal government would be paid. But South Carolina wanted to have none of that. They wanted control of the fort that was, after all, in the middle of their harbor. So the fleet comes down just outside of Charleston Harbor, and it's quite clear that it's an act of war, which will go to Fort Sumter and resupply Fort Sumter with ammunition and guns, and establish at least a garrison, additional garrison of soldiers there. So South Carolina couldn't have that. And in response, it fired on Fort Sumter, which fell within within a day. It was a kind of a sitting duck out there in the harbor with shots from all around it on the shore. And it surrendered in a day. And there was nobody killed or injured in that whole operation. The next day, when the Union Jack, American
right.
Union flag was lowered, they fired off cannons for salute, and on the 47th shot, the cannon blew up and killed one soldier and injured another. The only casualties in this. But it was sufficient for Lincoln to use as an excuse that the South had started the war.
Yes.
When in fact he had started the war.
And many historians agree that it was Lincoln's war, that he chose to have a war. It wasn't necessary at all. We're talking on the Burt Cohen Show with Kirkpatrick Sale, historian, about 150 years ago, the start of the so-called Civil War, the war against secession, more correctly known. Now, I love history, Kirk. I'm sure you love history, but why is this of interest today? I mean, this subject, the war against the South, against secession, was settled back in 1865. Now, why, or was it not settled? Why is there discussion today? And why is this subject of interest to people who may not care all that much about, you know, grooving on old history?
Well, nothing was settled in 1865. And indeed, in 1863, with issuing an Emancipation Proclamation, Lincoln was able to create an act and a cause and fire a war that would have effects lasting for at least 100 years more, maybe better said 150 years more. The act of emancipation, which in fact did not free all the slaves. It was intended to free slaves only in the Confederacy,
right,
and to free them so that they would rise up on the plantations in a rebellion against their masters. It was not intended to free any of the slaves in the northern or border states.
Well, I'd like to talk more about the Emancipation Proclamation a little bit later into the program, but why is it of interest now to people now with what's going on in politics in the year 2011? It seems to me that there are, in fact, many issues, really, that can go back to those issues that are unresolved, that were involved, why people put their lives on the line to fight for what they believe in.
Well, I think, you know, the overarching interest here is that Lincoln and the Republicans created a modern industrial state capable of extending its empire across the continent, and as it turned out, even farther than that.
Quite a bit, yes.
Whereas the Southerners and many other people as well resisted the idea of that powerful a government. The Founding Fathers had very carefully created a constitution that would not allow for that sort of centralized, powerful state. And for 60, 70 years, people, particularly in the South, had sought to prevent this kind of state emerging. But it did, in fact, emerge,
yes.
And the war was an immense propellant to that, because northern industrial interests, after all, financed and were rewarded by that war.
Mm-hmm.
The kind of military contracts that existed there made millionaires of many in the North. And after that, there was a nation state that had it had done away with habeas corpus for the period of the war,
mm-hmm.
proven it to be a powerful and, if need be, lawless centralized government, and that it was capable then of making the United States into a world power, certainly a power that could dominate the continent.
Sure.
In fact, immediately after the war, there began a campaign to get rid of all the Indians that were between Kentucky and the Pacific Ocean.
Yeah.
And so they did. And then follow it by putting down railroads across the continent,
yeah,
and establishing its might from coast to coast. So that's the kind of state that we have today.
Yes.
But today, it has become apparent that there are still forces that want to resist this kind of all-inclusive, all-powerful national government. And the Tea Party is one expression of that. The resistance to Obamacare is another instance of that. A general feeling of blue states, red states is another mm-hmm. example of that kind of feeling that we have gone wrong. We've gone too far. We've become too big, and it's too unmanageable.
Yes.
As well. And it is destroying individual freedom in ways that are so subtle and powerful that a great many people don't even realize it's happening.
But there is certainly great concern about the power that we now see in a centralized, concentrated group of a few largely white men who just have tremendous power over the rest of us. Kirkpatrick Sale, perhaps you know, I don't know the source of this quote. As far as I know, as an unknown citizen after the war against secession, the quote was, "This war didn't end slavery, it made slaves of us all." A, do you know who said it? And B, what does that mean?
I don't know who said it. I've seen that. What it meant was that we were now all subject to a powerful, centralized government based in Washington. And it had the power to print money, which Lincoln did.
Mm-hmm.
They were called greenbacks. It had the power to influence college, university education, as it did in the Morrill Act, mm-hmm. passed under Lincoln. It had the power to interfere in ways during the war that they kept on after the war, in what would be permitted for newspapers, what would be permitted in dissent in the country.
Well, it also seems like people on the left and right, mainly to the right now, are getting a sense, where is the power? I'd like to have some power. This show is coming at you from New Hampshire, and we have a strong sense of, well, there's, you know, live free or die, but also local control. And there's more and more people from the left, largely, the old sort of hippie culture, who like the idea of grow your own, you know, buy local. And that seems to be happening throughout the country. And yet, what we're fighting against, struggling against, is large agribusiness that has much more power than the local family organic farm. You know, the power is concentrated on Wall Street, the centralized power. And they seem to have power over not just Republicans, but Democrats as well. I mean, Obama's just as in the clutches of Wall Street as any Republican would be. And it seems to me that that kind of centralized power, correct me if I'm wrong, would have been something that the Confederacy would probably not have gone along with and not even allowed, really. Am I on track, do you think?
Well, It certainly, one of the reasons for its secession was its unwillingness to go along with that. I mean, that was that was clear as the agenda for Lincoln and the Republicans in 1860. And it was clear that and at that time, the South, which had no votes for Lincoln whatsoever,
right.
The South was going to be without power in Washington at all, both in Congress and,
sure.
of course, in the administration. And they could foresee what kind of a nation the Republicans wanted to build, and they didn't want any part of it. Right. That was part of that nation that they wanted to build depended upon the South for much of its prosperity, and they didn't want the South to escape and destroy that prosperity. The most important of all of the exports in the nation in 1860 were agricultural products from the South. The South was a vital economic engine, and the Northerners well realized that.
Mm-hmm.
So the South could see that this control by the North would undoubtedly eventually lead to the destruction of slavery. And they didn't want to have any part of that.
Well, isn't it...
While you mention New Hampshire, let me just add, there is the Free State Project in New Hampshire. So it's not just left hippies.
No.
But a considerable number of libertarian types
who might
be called on the right.
Yes.
Who are also against centralized federal power.
I think that's very interesting that I don't think the left has picked up on this as much as they could, how there is some commonality with wanting some local control. I mean, there's a struggle in Vermont right now over who has power over relicensing the nuclear plant. There's been a few problems with nuclear power of late, and the plant in Vernon, Vermont, they only got their license many years ago by agreeing that the state had some power over the licensing and that the state could say, no, you can't turn it on again because it's supposed to retire in 2012. And now we have the federal government saying, no, you guys can go ahead and keep operating for another 20 years, even though they've been operating for close to 40 years now, and there's some problems there. So it's a struggle between states' rights and the power of the federal government. I think it's very interesting how it just hasn't been resolved. We are talking with historian Kirkpatrick Sale about 150 years ago, the start of the war against secession. And... the issue of slavery, obviously, is going to come up. You know, you ask kids, what was the Civil War about? It was about freeing the slaves. Lincoln was a great president because he freed the slaves. Very simplistic. And recently, the Reverend Nelson Rivers III of the NAACP said, people who believe the war was fought over states' rights are not confronting the real cause, slavery. And we are talking about why we should be interested in the and what the war was fought about and what was not resolved. You know, a lot of people kind of imagine there was some consensus that was agreed to after the war against secession. But we're talking about slavery, of course. You know, the general consensus is that it was over slavery. Aren't the words states' rights really just a code word for slavery? Isn't that really what it was all about?
No, it certainly wasn't all about slavery. It was about the right of states to have power on their own, not controlled by the federal government. One of those rights was the right to own slaves, and that was a very important part of the Southern thinking. But it stems from that belief that all power should not go to Washington and create this enormous centralized federal government. A feeling strong in 1789, a feeling strong in 1860, and a feeling that is, as we see, surfacing again today.
Well,
that things have just gotten out of hand. But that process of centralization of a modern industrial nation began with Abraham Lincoln in 1860. So that takes us about why he began the war, and it wasn't to end slavery. In fact, he said as much
right.
in his inaugural speech in 1861. He said, I have no intention of doing away with slavery. I would not invade any nation except any state except if they refuse to hand over the federal tariffs and imposts that this government depends for its livelihood. And that's the only thing he said he would invade about. But then when he finally got into office, he decided that they had to have the South as part of the nation in order to have the powerful kind of rich nation that Lincoln and the Republicans were trying to build. And he said that. He said that it was for the Union. It wasn't to free the slaves. Nobody thought that it was had any intention of freeing the slaves. And it wasn't until the end of 1862, when the Northern armies were in big trouble, and they were having difficulties in recruitment, that the people around Lincoln pressed for emancipation as what they called a war measure.
Right.
That is to say, the slaves in the South would be given their freedom, and that meant that they could rise up on the plantations, and they could join the Union Army, and they would be free men serving in the Army. And that would solve the problem of recruitment. It didn't quite solve it because a great segment of the North did not want to fight this war, but it certainly helped, and that was the only purpose. It was not to free slaves because, right. in fact, all the slaves in the North and the border states were not freed, although Lincoln had the power to free them or Congress had the power to free them, but they didn't do that, and it wasn't interested in freeing slaves. It was interested in recruiting black people as soldiers.
And wasn't it also, I'm sure that the Southern economy, well, the entire American economy depended on slaves, but the South even more, and their economy was taking a substantial hit in the mid part of the war against secession. And that, you know, a way to bring down the power of another country, the enemy, is to destroy the economy. So I imagine that was part of the motivation as well. But slavery was, you touched on a number of issues there. Slavery was part of the United States since its founding. And the whole country's economy, I hesitate to say nation because it seems to me it's at least two separate nations, but the whole country's economy was largely dependent on slavery, not just the South, for exports, agriculture, textiles, certainly. Textiles were a huge part of the Northern economy as well. So wasn't the Northern economy also dependent on slavery, at least in the beginning of the war?
Well, they were dependent upon Southern cotton, Yankee ship owners who exported that cotton to England, which was the major market. Yes, the economy depended upon the South, and the South depended upon slaves.
Right.
Now, there's an argument to be made that the economy of the South would change in time, as it was found that slaves were not profitable for most of the crops that they were used for, and that there were indeed mechanized substitutes for slaves that had been studied and employed in various places in the South, that the institution might have crumbled by itself. But what emancipation served to do, emancipation without any compensation to the slave owners and without any provision of how to integrate the blacks into the labor force without any provisions for educating the freed blacks, without any provision for an economy where the free blacks could work. So what the crude Emancipation Proclamation did was to create free but absolutely helpless blacks in the South. And they and the North, so far from welcoming them into the North, passed laws forbidding blacks, free blacks, to be in such states as Illinois, Lincoln's state, and Ohio, and others. The North didn't want these free blacks, so they were more or less stuck in the South, where they didn't have anything to do, and they became basically sharecroppers in a new kind of slave system. And even Frederick Douglass, the black orator,
yes,
writer, Frederick Douglass in 1888 said that the slavery was worse then than it had been in 1858.
Hmm. Well,
it's it was just a terrible blunder, and I'm considering writing a book called Emancipation Hell, because that's what it created for 100 years, 150 years, at least for 100 years.
Well, I had the author of a book called Slavery by Another Name on this show about a year or so ago, and it documents how slavery continued, in many cases, kind of got even worse, well into the 20th century, because it just, there were no, as you say, no provisions made for what would happen then. And the North, as I understand it, Kirk, before the South attempted to secede, I understand that there was a lot of talk in the North in favor of Northern secession.
Yes, indeed.
Well, tell us about that. I don't know much about that.
Well, that's those were the emancipator types who said that it was immoral for us to be connected with those bad people who had slaves. So why doesn't the North secede? In fact, Horace Greeley himself, the editor of the Tribune, said the North should secede so that we don't have to put up with those bad people in the South. And, of course, this was mostly ignored because, as I said, the North was dependent upon the Southern economy.
And yet the Southern senators didn't have a lot of power. There was that whole struggle throughout the early 19th century about the South really not, the Southern senators not really having any power. And there was the whole deal with the expansion to the West. Would they be, you know, allied with the North or with the South? So it was a long time coming, for sure. And you're listening to The Burt Cohen Show. Our guest today is Kirkpatrick Sale, historian and author of 12 books, including Power Shift, Human Scale, The Fire of His Genius, Robert Fulton, and The American Dream. That sounds very interesting, I must say. So going back 150 years, if you asked a Union soldier why he was fighting, what would he say?
150 years ago, he would say that he was fighting because the government had called up the troops.
Hmm.
And if you wanted to press him farther than that, he would say to keep the Union intact.
Uh-huh. But there was
that's as far as anybody would have thought at the time.
Well,
anybody on or off the battlefield would have thought that.
And there was certainly a great deal of resistance, obviously, in the New York City riots against the draft, and they lynched a lot of black people, blaming them for the war. It was a horrible, horrible scene. So I know there was a lot of resistance in the North against fighting the war. There was the whole Copperhead movement, which was fairly significant in opposing the war. But let me ask.
That brings up another point, Bert, about racism. It is usually thought that it was the South was this terrible racist place. The fact is, racism existed both North and South.
Yeah. Yeah, it did, and it has continued.
It existed deep in that society, and those there were race riots and in mixed in with the draft riots, but race riots and lynchings elsewhere in the North. And Lincoln himself was an out-and-out racist.
Oh, clearly.
He as he said many times, the races are separate and distinct, and the white race should be the superior one.
Yeah, it's hard to imagine given the myth that's been built up around Lincoln, but it's certainly true. I understand the term racism didn't even come into being really until fairly far into the 20th century because it was just such a given. That's just the way the country was. I asked earlier what a Union soldier would say as to why he was fighting. Now, if you asked a Confederate soldier why he was fighting, what do you think he'd say, Kirk? He may not have owned slaves. He probably didn't own any slaves. Probably did. I don't know. So why would he be fighting?
Fighting for the Confederacy. Fighting for the independent state in which he lived. Fighting for the right of those states to resist federal encroachment. A sentiment that exists
quite a bit
strongly today as well. Although we haven't yet reached the point that there is secession. Although, as you know, one of my big concerns is to watch the secession movement in this country and see how it grows. And there is some strong sentiment.
Oh, yeah. It's not getting weaker. I think it's interesting. You know, just a few years ago, if one said secession, you were immediately looked at as a total kook. Today, yeah, maybe somewhat, but a lot less so. And obviously, the war against secession was incredibly bloody. It was just a horrendous war. I won't go into the horrible deaths of 620,000 Americans, but there has been politically motivated violence lately, and it's been kind of this fight between right and perceived left, and it seems like some of the issues are frankly still the same, which had been not resolved in the war against secession. Back in the 1860, the Northerners called the rebels traitors, the enemies of America. But Kirk, you know history quite a bit. How consistent with American tradition was secession?
Well, if you accept the fact that we began our nation in a secession from Great Britain, which indeed we did, and we said that any people, when desiring it, have the right to declare their independence and establish their own government.
Right.
That's the Declaration of Independence. It's a secessionist document. So that is a very key part of the American political tradition right from the beginning. And indeed, it was assumed to be a part of it. For example, when some New England states threatened secession in 1812, it was Jefferson who wrote that he should not like to see them secede, but if that's what they wish to do, he would wish them well. That's how common the idea of secession was at the beginning of this country. And it was only the kind of politics that saw a growingly centralized and growingly powerful nation as the object that would resist secession and call it rebellion,
mm-hmm.
which is what Lincoln called it.
Are we not a voluntary association of states? I kind of thought that's what was part of who the currently United States are.
Well, that's what it started out as. One of the ways in which the Founding Fathers sought to have a balance of power and to prevent their becoming the kind of nation that Lincoln and the Republicans created was not just the separation of powers, legislative, right, judicial,
and executive,
administrative, and so on, but to have a good deal of power back in the states. And the states as independent governments that had agreed to form this union for certain limited causes. And we'll make sure that stays limited, because we'll put in a 10th Amendment saying that the powers that aren't put down right here in this Constitution here are reserved to the states and the people. And you can't have it in Washington. And so states' rights was a central idea of the Founding Fathers.
Certainly was. And today we have the Tenthers, people like the Free Staters, people who want to pick up and use the 10th Amendment. Again, we're talking on the Bert Cohen Show with Drew Patrick Sale, historian, about the 150th anniversary of the start of the war against secession. And I've often wondered this. What worked to prevent British and French recognition of the Confederacy? And wouldn't that have made a huge difference if Britain and France had recognized the Confederacy? Why didn't it happen?
It certainly would.
Why didn't it
certainly
happen?
Would. And what Lincoln accomplished with the Emancipation Proclamation, and I'm not exactly sure that this is what he intended at any point. What he accomplished was saying to the world that we are fighting people who keep slaves. No mention of the fact that there were slave states in the North and that the Emancipation Proclamation did not touch them. But the kind of spin that at least the emancipationists and the abolitionists wanted to put on that proclamation, the spin in the eyes of the world meant that one side had slaves and the other side didn't. And it would be very difficult for England, having the first half of the century,
right,
in abolishing the slave trade,
right,
and actually abolishing slavery in its colonies in the Caribbean, and being a champion of the anti-slavery movement. It would be very difficult for Britain at that point to have defended the Confederacy, and France much the same.
Interesting.
It was not an anti-slavery proclamation, but it had that smell to it, and so that was what would make it very difficult for England suddenly to say that we are coming in on the side of the slave owners.
Right. Yeah, interesting. How could the war have been avoided? Was it just Lincoln's war? I suspect it was not. I mean, obviously, he was the big, he was the decider, as George W. Bush would say. But how could it have been avoided, do you think? And it's impossible to say, but I wonder what shape these currently United States would be in now.
I don't think the war could have been avoided as long as the forces for this centralized state were so powerful. Powerful enough so that Lincoln was able to lock up editors and shut down newspapers that he didn't want, but throw people into prison that he wanted to. This we're talking here about a extremely powerful government that has almost no limits, and as long as you're going to you have that as your idea, then there are no limits to how you're going to keep states from seceding. And indeed, there were no limits. So the North waged the first total war on, as it turned out, on civilians and civilian property in a way that most of the rest of the world would recognize as uncivilized.
Yeah.
The bloody rampage that Sherman and, right. and those generals engaged in the last 2 years of the war, and indeed in the 17 successive years of the military occupation of the South, killed off many millions of people. Now, you mentioned 620,000. That's thought to be the soldiers killed
actual
weapons and disease in that period. But the civilians was another 50 to 80,000 people that when the Union armies marched through the South and just cut down, burned down anything in their path.
Huge, unbelievably huge. Now,
I don't think there was any alternative to the war. Once the Republicans got unchecked into office, because this is what the Northern economic interests needed. But I do think that there was many alternatives to freeing the slaves the way they did it, as the British had done, as the Portuguese had done, as other nations had done, as states in the North had done. Gradual emancipation with compensation for the owners of the slaves and with provisions for the resettlement and integration of the former slaves into the society. Now, the North hadn't been very good at that last part because the racism was so deep.
Yes.
But
it didn't take a war.
White laborers didn't want black laborers competing.
Right.
But there were ways that you could have gradually freed the slaves without creating the hell that Lincoln created.
I'm sure. Well, let me ask one final question. I am a believer in historical inevitabilities. I think that there will be a free and independent Palestine. I don't think there's any question. It will happen. The Soviet Union had to break up. The Balkans had to do what they did. I believe Ireland will be united. Kirkpatrick Sale, do you think that with all that's going on today in 2011, with the tensions right and left, blue and red, is breakup of the USA inevitable? Are you there?
Inevitable?
Yes.
Historical necessity?
Yes.
I would say that it was. I would say that it would come along with a general collapse of the national society, with economic environmental stress so great as to lead to political stress and to a political breakup. I see that as a real possibility. I would say, I could say within the next 10 to 15 years. I've made a considerable bet that it would happen by 2020. I'm not exactly sure that it will be by that date, but I see a general disintegration of this society, simply because it can't go on the way it's going. It is unable to govern 310 million people.
All right.
That's just simply too big, and over too big an area.
Yeah.
And so I am sure that and as we see, it's a corrupt and inefficient centralized system. It just isn't getting the job done in any respect, in the economy, jobs, health, anything.
Yeah.
Education. So I think that the disintegration will happen without the firing of a shot within the next 15.
About I'm sorry, how many?
10 to 15.
10 to 15. Wow. Well, I was going to guess in my children's lifetime, but things are moving pretty fast here. That is for sure. Well, Kirkpatrick Sale, despite the difficulties with our technicalities here, the phone company, at least they've broken up for the most part. It's been very, very interesting conversation. If people are interested in following some of your writing and getting in touch, how might they do that? Something on the web, I assume?
Well, there's the Middlebury Institute.
Yes.
.org.
Mm-hmm.
That has a great many of my pieces on it. Also, folks there might be interested in Vermont Commons.
Oh, yes.
Next door.
Right.
The newspaper that comes out every couple of months, where I have a regular column.
Yeah, very interesting stuff over there. And that can certainly be looked at online as well. Very interesting. The war against secession never really ended, clearly. Thanks very much for being with us, Kirkpatrick Sale.
Sure thing, Bert.
All right.
Happy to.
Thank you very much. And this is a real good version, a Southern version of Dixie.
Worse than death before you. Two horns, two horns, two horns in Dixie. Blow all the beacon fires are lighted. Let all hearts be now united. Two horns, two horns, two horns in Dixie. Advance the flag of Dixie. Hoorah, hoorah. For Dixie's land we take our stand and live or die for Dixie. Two arms, two arms, and conquer peace for Dixie. Two arms, two arms, and conquer peace. For Dixie. Oh, hear the northern thunders mutter, northern flags and south winds flutter. Two arms, two arms, two arms in Dixie. Send them back your fierce defiance, stamp upon the cursed alliance. Two arms, two arms, two arms in Dixie. Advance the flag of Dixie. Hoorah, hoorah. For Dixie's land we take our stand and live or die for Dixie. Two arms, two arms, and conquer. For Dixie, two arms, and conquer peace for Dixie. Fear no danger, shun no labor, lift up rifle, pike, and saber. Two arms, two arms, two arms in Dixie. Shoulder pressing close to shoulder, let the odds make each heart bolder. Two arms, two arms, two arms in Dixie. Advance the flag of Dixie, hoorah, hoorah. For Dixie's land we take our stand and live or die for Dixie. Two arms, and conquer peace for Dixie. Two arms, and conquer peace for Dixie. Shout! was in Dixie. Hoorah, hoorah, for Dixie's land we take our stand. To live or die in Dixie. Away, away, away down south in Dixie. Away, away, away down south in Dixie.